All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in Kapitol Yudalit, chapter 14, in Tehillim. So let's just take a couple of moments to just go through the Kapitol a little, to see what the dominant theme is, and then perhaps to choose a couple of specific points to focus on. So Lam Natseach LeDavid. So already we've spoken about numerous times that David HaMelech, when he composed Sefer Tehillim, really composed it to be a musical composition. So David HaMelech often sets it to music, as well as in some Kapitloch actually tells us the particular instrument to be used. Lam Natseach, so to the conductor. We saw in the past, the Malbim, the Radak, the Ibn Ezra, understood that the Minatseach, the conductor, referred to the head of the Levitic choir. So David is saying, Lam Natseach, head of the choir, here's what you have to do. Amar Naval Belibo. The Naval. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time focusing on the meaning of this word, but right now we'll just use the English over here. The fool said in his heart, Ein Elokim, there is no God. Hishchiso hisivo alilo ein oseto. And therefore, because there is no God, they have dealt corruptly, they have committed abominable deeds, no one does good. Hashem mishamayim hishkif al bnei adam, liros hayish maskil doresh es Elokim. So God looks down from the heavens, he sees man, and he wonders, is there anyone among the community of mankind who actually understands or tries to seek out the presence of God? Hakol sayachtov ne'elochu ein osetov ein gam echad. All have turned away. Together they have spoiled. No one does good, not even one. Halo yodu kopali oven ochle ami ochlu lechem Hashem lo karo. Did not all the workers of iniquity know? Great fear, God, I'm sorry. Those who have devoured my people partook of a feast. They did not call upon the Lord. Again, same idea. David HaMelech is talking about the fact that people turn away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They turn away from God. No one seeks out God. And to compound facts, here's an interesting correlation. It's not our topic for today, but it's just interesting food for thought. There's a correlation between your relationship with God and your relationship with the Jewish people. Meaning that those who ultimately shun God, it's only a matter of time until they come to shun the Jewish people themselves. So if you notice, there's a progression in the Kapitol. David HaMelech first talks about the relationship of mankind with God. Once mankind forsakes God, once mankind no longer really actively seeks out God, that forsaking of God translates into an animosity of the Jewish people. Pasuk Hey, Sham Pachad Upachad Kelokim Bedar Tzadik, Atzas Ani Tavishu Ki Hashem Machseyu. You put to shame the counsel of the poor, for the Lord is his refuge. And the Kapitol ends off by saying, Mi yitain mitzion yeshuas Yisrael, Beshuv Hashem shavus amo, Yagel Yaakov gismach Yisrael. Oh, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Tzion, when the Lord returns the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice, Israel shall be glad. So at first glance, this Kapitol really seems to continue the theme of a good majority of the first 13 Kapitloch. Namely, David HaMelech speaks about the fact that man turns his back on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God doesn't turn his back on man. Man turns his back on God. In this Kapitol, he adds on the piece that once you turn your back on God, it's only a matter of time until you vent that animosity upon the Jewish people. Therefore, the Jewish people, by definition, become almost the recipient of all of the aggression of the nations of the world. We take it, we understand it, it's part of the plight of our nationhood, but we also, and David HaMelech ends off with the understanding that one day HaKadosh Baruch Hu will right the wrongs, and it's only a matter of time until HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately lifts us up from the depths of our suffering and our difficulties and redeems us and takes us back actively as his own. In that sense, Kapitol Yud-Dalet is not all that different than Kapitol Yud-Gimel, than Kapitol Yud-Beis, than Kapitol Yud-Aleph. All the same theme. Again, just as I pointed out, there is this additional idea that once you have a fractured relationship with God, that by definition leads to animosity of the Jewish people. Which, of course, is quite intuitive, because as a people we're known as what? God's people. Meaning, as a whole, what makes Am Yisrael so incredibly different is when people look at us, they see the children of God. If you don't like the father, then by definition, you will not like the children. Which it's an interesting study into anti-Semitism, because very often anti-Semitism has been rooted in religious differences, right? Remember, the greatest source of anti-Semitism throughout the ages has been, right, the church. the church. So it is interesting, we often identify anti-Semitism with an ideological or theological dispute. It's not so clear. It could be that anti-Semitism has its root ultimately in a fractured relationship with God, which then leads to animosity with God's chosen children. Not our topic for today. Instead, what I'd like to draw your attention to is one word. Novel. Novel. Now, interestingly enough, probably I would think that the most well-known usage of this word is where? Okay, nevela, good, carcass of an animal. Novel b'shus haTorah. Right? The Torah in Kiddushim says, Kiddushim tiyu. You're supposed to be kadosh. The problem is that the Mefarshim struggles, what does that mean? We don't have to take a poll, right? We all agree with that. We have to be kadosh. The question becomes, how exactly does that manifest itself? So the famous Ramban writes that a person should not be a novel birshus haTorah. What does that mean? That a person could be technically observant, but a person could still be living an inappropriate life. So for example, the Ramban says, there's nothing wrong with having meat and wine for breakfast, meat and wine for lunch, and meat and wine for dinner. I mean, leaving aside our cholesterol issues and all the other things. But technically speaking, from a Torah perspective, there's nothing technically wrong with it. But is it right? Is it right? No. The Rabban gives other examples. He says, let's say, in the world of physical intimacy, from the Jewish vantage point of sexuality. So we don't believe in abstinence, we don't believe in a withdrawal, but at the same time, we work within a construct. Why? Because Kedoshim Tiyu means that you have to try to be Mekadosh, you have to sanctify yourself in the realm of what's permitted. Staying away from that which is prohibited, that's not Kedusha, that's following orders. Going ahead and exercising restraint, appropriate restraint, even in the world of that which is permitted, that's where Kedusha, that's where holiness is found. So the way the Ramban refers to an individual who exploits the system, meaning that the person is not technically doing anything wrong, but yet they are amplifying all that which is permissive, is called a novel birshus haTorah. So, you know, the way we normally translate it is, we would normally translate it as glutton. A glutton, a person who is a, I guess we'll call it a righteous glutton. Right, so a righteous glutton, someone who's not violating any of the laws, but is clearly not living within the spirit of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking of us. So it's just interesting over here. Now the English translation that I used of it is fool. So David HaMelech, there are many words for fool. What are the words that David HaMelech used for fool? Kseel. Right, Kseel is the most popular one. David HaMelech uses multiple times in Tehillim. Or what else? Pesi. Right? Pei, Tof, Yud, Pesi. So, you know, there are other words that more directly mean fool. If David HaMelech is using this word, novel, it must mean that there's something specific about this word, something that he's trying to convey. I think I mentioned this way back, but David HaMelech was the paradigmatic teacher. Why? What's the best kind of teacher you could have in life? Best kind of teacher. We've all had them, hopefully. Right? So teach by example, that's true. But I'm talking about more of like a learning model. The right kind of teacher is one who doesn't spoon-feed you information. Right? Because someone who just gives you information, that's very nice. A good teacher challenges you and gets you to think, to try to figure things out on your own. Because we all know that when you come to something because someone told it to you, it's very interesting. But when you come to a realization because you have engaged in the process of intellectual discovery, it is the apex of human accomplishment. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that makes us unique from the rest of creation is a mind. When I use that mind to discover something that someone didn't give me, but I came to on my own, yes, with the tools that were given to me, we know because we've had that feeling. It's an incredible feeling of intellectual and ultimately spiritual elation. So David HaMelech, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his Torah, could have written what he meant. He could have told us why he used the word novel. He could have been much more explicit. But he Dafka doesn't do that because now, a couple thousand years later, he wants us to try to figure out that process for ourselves because that's the way we're kone the kapitel. We acquire the chapter for ourselves when we have to dig deep to figure out what he means. So why novel? So there are a couple of different approaches to understanding the meaning of this word. So if you look at number two, The Ibn Ezra writes, Lam Natsech Amar Naval. What's a Naval? What's a Naval? Hefech Chacham. Hefech Chacham. So the Ibn Ezra says, sometimes it's easier to explain something by using opposites. What is a Naval? Not a Chacham. The opposite of a Chacham. Okay. Ba'avur sheyedame she'en elokim. Ba'avur ze hishchiso darkam v'yisivo ma'aleim kimo obal yosayich asicha ein osetova. So according to Ibn Ezra, David HaMelech Dafka uses a word for the opposite, the antithesis of a Chacham. Because who are we talking about in this capital? Somebody who says, belibo in his heart, ein elokim. There is no God. So says David HaMelech, I can't call a person like that a ksil or a pesi, because it's not enough. I have to call him someone who denies the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a novel. That's the antithesis of a Chacham. What is David HaMelech trying to highlight over here? That to deny the existence of God from the Davidic perspective is the absolute opposite of intellect. Because David HaMelech assumes that if a person has any level of intellect, the first thing you come to is what? Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. And even if you can't fully appreciate God or understand God, it's obvious, no? I mean, we're a little biased in this. But it should be obvious because you look around the world and the world is so complex and our bodies are so complex and the universe is so complex that it can't, there has to be a prime mover that is shaping all of this. So therefore, David HaMelech says, who is this person who says, Belibo in his heart, Ein Elokim, a novel. Not a fool. The antithesis of Chachma. That's the Ibn Ezra. Radak comes along and says, number three. So according to Ibn Ezra, by the way, David HaMelech is not referring to anyone specific. David HaMelech is talking about, in general, broad categories. If you look at number three, the Radak says, Zeha Mizmor, Lamaseach David, Zeha Mizmor Gamkein, Hu Aloshon Hagolos. Now, what we're going to see is, Radak started with the Ibn Ezra because he has the broadest understanding. Now it's going to become narrower and narrower. So according to the Radak, no. David HaMelech is not speaking in generalities. David HaMelech is referring to Golos. He's referring to the diaspora existence of the Jew. Amar Naval Belibo Ein Elokim. So the Naval says there is no God. And who is the Naval? The Naval Hu Melech HaUmos SheYisrael BiYadan. Naval is a generic term to refer to all of the rulers who oppressed the Jewish people. Because the only way, David HaMelech says, you could oppress the Jewish people is what? Or is how? Is by thinking that there is no God. Because if you truly believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you understand that by oppressing the Jewish people, you will be dealt with in kind. So it's not a good move. It's not a good move. Therefore, the Radak says, David HaMelech over here is specifically referring, Naval refers to all of the Gentile rulers of all of the nations that oppressed us over time. And he goes on, and the reason they feel so free to oppress us in such barbaric and dramatic ways, says the Radak, is because they assume there will never be any divine reciprocity. The only way you could assume such an idea is if ultimately you totally deny the existence of God. And take it a step further. Take it a step further. Which is, I know it's going to sound strange, but what the Radak could also be saying is, it doesn't have to be that you believe in a Jewish God. What the Radak is highlighting over here is, how is it that the Jewish people have been oppressed in ways that no other nation has been oppressed? How do you explain that? How do you explain that? Meaning, we have enemies also. You know, we have an obligation. You know, it's interesting. One of the fascinating, I think, things that people often struggle with is Amalek, right? It's coming up pretty soon. Right? We're going to have Parsha Zohar, Purim. What's the mitzvah? What's the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek? Wiping out. Who do you wipe out? Every man, woman, and child. Now, today they would call that what? Today they call it genocide. But yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us to do that. But you know what the interesting part is? The interesting part is, that's only if they don't renounce their Amalekiteness, right? If you have an Amalekite who renounces that Amaleki ideology, right? It's an interesting discussion as to whether or not you could accept Gerim. Can you accept converts from Amalek? We'll actually discuss that today a little bit. So meaning, as a people, we might have ideologies that we are obligated to erase, But we never have obligations to just simply eradicate individuals. It doesn't happen. So should the nation of Amalek hold their, you know, national conference and decide that, you know, as an Amalekite nation, we renounce Amalekite ideology. We accept God. We're not becoming Jewish. We accept God. We're not, fine, wonderful. Then the whole mitzvah is done, or the mitzvah essentially has been accomplished, but just by Amalek themselves. So the Radak struggles with, so how do you explain how the Jewish people have been treated throughout the ages? How do you explain the persecution? How do you explain the torture? How do you explain the things that have happened to us? You don't have to go so far back in history, right? You go back 70 years ago. How do you explain that type of maniacal behavior? So the Radak says it only comes about if you don't believe in God. Because if you believe in God, and you can give that God any name that you want, but if you believe in God, then you believe in a system of divine reciprocity. And you believe in a God that created all humanity. Then you must believe that if you mistreat God's creations, that ultimately there will be some level of reciprocity from that God, whatever name you are attributing to Him. Therefore, by definition, says Radak, it must mean the only way to persecute people like we have been persecuted is if a person says, Belibo, Ein Elokim, there is no God. Yes. It's a. What, so the Radak says. So here's what the Radak would say. The Radak would tell you that any religion that requires the erasure of people or the wholesale persecution of people is a flawed ideology. Because if you believe in God, then you believe, like we say every day, the Rachamov. Doesn't matter what you say. I'm agreeing with you. What do we say every single day? What do the Rachamov al kol ma'asov? It is a foundation of our religion. That's why Jews, it's been lost a little bit as time goes on because we've been forced to become a little bit more insular. But Judaism is a mankind religion. We speak about an or lagoyim. What does that mean? It means that we are the people who treat the rest of humanity how to behave. Why? Because we are a religion that does not, we believe in rachamim for everyone. For everyone. So the Radak will say, we're all aware that there are many religions that preach, you know, destroying segments of humanity. The Radak will say, great, they don't really believe in God. Because if you believe in God, then it has to be that a foundation of your faith is rachamav al kol ma'asav. Once you say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes these and doesn't like these, once you say that your religious mandate is to destroy some segment of humanity, you don't believe in God. You don't believe in God. Yes?
You said that all the Christians during the ages didn't believe God.
They had a flawed ideology, 100. I will tell you. I'll tell you even better. Again, I feel awkward saying this in a shul. The urn is close. So I'll say it. One of the major what's one of the major teachings of the New Testament is to love thy neighbor, is to turn the other cheek. You know, Yashka did not make a distinction. Not that Yashka didn't know about any of the things about the New Testament, but I'm saying he did not make a distinction between this one or that one. He said it as a humanity concept. As a humanity concept. So 100%, the way that the church throughout the ages has manipulated the teachings is absolutely wrong. And even Christian theologians will tell you that. That's not, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that. But okay, so that's the Radak. So a fascinating, just theological idea that by definition, only the fool who doesn't believe in God could possibly go ahead and persecute people the way we have been persecuted throughout the ages. Okay, take a look at number four. The Malbim, now again, just so you follow our pattern, we're going to become narrower and narrower in our definition. So look at the Malbim number four. Amar Nava Balibo Ein Elokim Sha'amelech Shaba'alav Hichish Mitzias Hashem. Says the Malbim, David HaMelech is referring to someone specific. He's referring to a king who went ahead and totally hichish, contradicted the very existence of God. And who is that? Kimo Shegam Sancheirif. So the Malbim understands that who is David HaMelech prophetically referring to? Sancheirith. Now who was Sancheirith? Sancheirith was the king of Ashur, right? The king of Assyria, who ultimately tried to go, he was successful in exiling certain segments of the Jewish people, tried to conquer Yerushalayim, was unsuccessful in that particular bid. But he was an incredible antagonist of the Jewish people. Okay, so hold on to that. So Malbim's saying it refers to Sancheirith. Take a look at number five. Rashi says, Amar Naval Belibo. Shnei Mizmorim Amar David Besefer Zeh Be'inyon. So David HaMelech speaks, there are two, we'll see that there are two sister kapitloch with this Naval Belibo idea, which we'll get to. But we're not going to worry about the second one right now. But Harishon Amavuchad Netzar. So according to Rashi, who is the novel, who is the fool in this particular capital? Nebuchadnezzar. Who was Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babel, actually again also in Yonah Dioma, the great-grandfather of Vashti, right? He was the ruler of Babel, of Babylon. He was probably the mightiest emperor on the face of the earth during his particular time. He conquers Yerushalayim. He conquers Eretz Yisrael. He destroys the first Beis HaMikdash. He exiles the Jewish people into the various, I mean, mostly into, still within the Middle East, mostly in the area of Bavel. So, according to Rashi, the novel over here is the Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so you see how it's happening over here? So we go from the Eben Ezra, who just understands that novel is a generic term for anyone who's not a Chacham. We then go to the Radak, who understands that, no, it's really more specifically referring to the rulers of the nations that oppress us. Then we become more individual specific. According to the Malbim, Sancheiriv, king of Assyria, who exiled certain tribes, who was tried to conquer Jerusalem, was unsuccessful. According to Rashi, Nebuchadnezzar, the king who actually destroys the first Beis HaMikdash, exiles the Jewish populace. Take a look at 6. According to the Metzudas, David, who is it? Amar Naval, Nebuzradon. So Rashi said, Metzudas, obviously it was Nebuzradon. Now, who was Nebuzradon? So take a look at number 7. Says the Gemara Maseches Tanis. Who was Nebuzradon? Now I'll tell you, as soon as I say it, you're actually going to remember this, because we speak about Nebuzradon on Tisha B'Av. There is a kino that speaks about Nebuzradon. So take a look at number 7. Says the Gemara, Charav Habayis Barishona, Ubechodesh HaChamishi, Vishiva Lechodesh, Hishnas Tshasri Lemelech Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, Ba Nebuzradon Rav Tabachim. Nebuzradon was a general of Nebuchadnezzar. But listen to the title that he's given. Rav HaTabachim means what? The chief butcher. The chief butcher. So Nebuzradon was not just... Nebuzradon was a ferocious, barbaric man. He was Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, like many great rulers, preferred not to get their hands too dirty with the atrocities that they committed upon people, but they had henchmen. They had ruthless henchmen who carried out the capital. It's actually I think it's one of the most troubling kinos in all of Tisha B'Av. It's actually based on the Gemara Maseches Gittin, which we'll quote in part number 8. The kina describes Nebuzradon, that his barbaric nature is that he took babies and he smashed their heads against rocks. And called, you know, so the Navi describes that the Gemara describes that the corpses, piles of corpses of children, as a result of Nebuzradon. It happens to be one of the motifs, a strong motif on Tisha B'Av, about brutality towards children, which is in general something that is unthinkable to people, no matter how much you hate someone. A child is a child, but yet Am Yisrael's children. I'm sorry? What? Okay, so it all goes back. It all goes back to ultimately that ultimately you can't believe in God. You can't believe God. The only way to commit this type of barbaric activity is if you don't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Nebuzradon was known as the Rav HaTabachim. He was the chief butcher of Nebuchadnezzar and committed and orchestrated all of the atrocities. Now, so what you have over here, so if you follow this progression, we now have three different approaches. So leaving aside the Eben Ezra and Radak, who speak more in generalities, we now have the Malbim telling us that the novel referred to over here is Sancheiriv. We have Rashi telling us the novel referred to over here is Nebuchadnezzar. And we have the Metzudas David telling us that it's referring to Nebuzradon. So, it's interesting. Whenever you see something like this, you have to ask, what's the question you have to ask yourself? Right? All right, well said. Who is it? Right? All right, I know. I think women in general are much more concrete thinkers. All right, so which one is it? So I'll tell you that I know I'm outnumbered over here, but I yes.
I think if you're using the word Nabo, which we, which usually translates as could be That, to me, seems like it's complicated.
Good. The only problem with that works well in the first line. It doesn't work well with the rest of the capital, right? Because the rest of the chapter is talking about oppression. So I agree with you. And by the way, this is the beauty of Tehillim. Tehillim is multifaceted. And you know what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at the whole capital as one. You don't have to. You don't have to. You can absolutely break that up. But I'll tell you what I think when you see... Yes? Yes, Naval Israeli. Yes, correct.
I don't remember the story.
Yes, that has to do with the, he was the owner. He was the owner of the future site of the Beis HaMikdash. So interestingly enough, for whatever reason, he's not brought down in this particular situation over here. I'm not sure why. No, not Naval. Naval was the husband of Abigail. Excuse me. Yes, the wife of Abigail. I'm sorry, he was not a nice guy. He didn't want to give David HaMelech food. When David HaMelech was on the run from Shaul, he came to Naval asking him for bread, for food. Naval wouldn't give it to him. David was ready to kill Naval as a result. Naval's wife interceded. Ultimately, Naval does die. David HaMelech marries the wife. But I don't know, he's not brought down in this. He's actually mentioned in the second capital of Naval. So what's interesting about this is the following. What's interesting is whenever you see this is, what's the common denominator? What's the common denominator between Nebuchadnezzar, between Sancheriv, between Nebuzradon? What is this? You could say they're all evil. They're all evil. Come on, people. Come on, you didn't come out on a cold morning just to get some. That's low-lying fruit. That's too obvious. So take a look at number 8. So there's an amazing Gemara. There's an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, Sachli Zokin Echad Me'anshi Sham." So I put down this whole story over here. You could look it on your. We're not going to go through all the specifics of it. I just want to highlight the end of it. So listen to this. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha said, "Sachli Zokin Echad Me'anshi." An elder of Jerusalem told me the following: "Bebikazu Harav Nevuzradon Rav Tavachim Masayim Va'achos Esrei Ribo." So listen to this. So an old man from Yerushalayim told me that in this valley, he has over here Nevuzaradan killed 211 myriads. Now, what's a myriad? Right? So it's actually used in different contexts. So sometimes it's 10,000, sometimes it's 100,000. So the point is, he killed tens of thousands of people in this particular valley. In this particular valley. And what happened? Yerushalayim harog tishim v'arba rivo al evan achos. And in Yerushalayim, this is what I mentioned before, by the kina, bless you. And in Yerushalayim, he killed 94,000 people on one stone. On one stone. That's the reference to the capital. Now, is it possible that the Gemara is employing a degree of hyperbole over here? It's quite possible. But the point the Gemara is making is that Nevuzradan clearly is the Ravat HaBachim. He clearly is this exceptional butcher. So listen to this. Ad shahalach daman v'naga v'damo shel Zechariah. Zechariah the Navi is killed by the Jewish people. We're not going to get into that story now. But the Gemara tells us that the blood of Zechariah remained on the ground bubbling. The notion that the Jewish people killed one of their prophets was an unforgivable sin. So the Gemara paints the following picture. Nevuzradan is killing children en masse. He's killing people en masse all over Yerushalayim. And so what happens? The blood of the people that Nevuzradan is killing mingles with the blood of the prophet Zechariah. That's the image. So the Gemara says, L'kai ma'ashenei ma'arfayin, Ashkeche l'dami de Zechariah, D'kava merhasach v'salik. So ultimately, so Nevuzradan sees the blood of Zechariah bubbling up. Amar my high. So Nevuzradan asks the people, what is this? Amrulei dam zvachim dishtapoch. They tell him the story about how Zechariah was killed by the Jewish people. I see dami v'lodam. So the Gemara goes on to say that Nevuzradan assumes that in order to go ahead, he understands that the bubbling of the blood of Zechariah must represent the fact that the Jewish people are exceptionally culpable for having killed one of their prophets. So Nebuzradan figures, how do I stop the blood of Zechariah from bubbling? How do you stop it? kill as many Jews as you can, because that will provide the kapara for the people. So the Gemara goes on to say, he's killing everyone. He kills out the entire Sanhedrin. He kills out everyone, and yet the blood of Zechariah is still bubbling. So if you skip down a little bit, he says the following. Amar Lei, so literally Nebuzradan says to the blood of Zechariah, 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 Tovin Shebahen Ibaritim, Necha Lecha De'avdinu Lekulu. So Nebuzradan says to Zechariah, Zechariah, I've killed out all of the best ones of the Jewish people. Do you want me to wipe out the entire people? Is that the only thing that will make you happy? Kid Amar Lei Hachi, Nach. When Nebuzradan makes that statement, the blood of Zechariah stopped bubbling. So you have to understand what's happening over here. So Nebuzradan, don't think that Nebuzradan was doing such a big favor, right? Nebuzradan felt that he had an excuse to kill Jews, because you see that even your God wants me to kill you. So he kills, thinking that he'll stop when the blood of Zechariah stops bubbling. The blood keeps bubbling. He literally calls Zechariah. So Nebuzradan realizes, even the head butcher realizes that he's about to totally wipe out the entire Jewish people. So he calls out to Zechariah. Right, when he says that, the blood stops bubbling. Almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that if he doesn't put a stop to Nebuzradan right now, there may actually be an existential threat to the Jewish people. Listen to how the story ends. Bahahi Shaita, in that moment, Hirher Tshuva Bedaite. In that moment, Nebuzradan had thoughts. Hirhure Tshuva. No, I think we spoke about this in Yemei Iyun in past. Rav Gifter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, speaks about the idea that the process of tshuva is a twofold process. You know, when the Rambam speaks about tshuva, that's often the mechanics of tshuva. What do you have to do? Rav Gifter explains that there is a process, a pre-tshuva process called, bless you, called Hirhur Tshuva. What's Hirhur Tshuva? Hirhur Tshuva is an awakening. An awakening. That things have to be different. I don't know what, I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know where, but I do know that I know that the way I'm living right now is not correct. Something has to change. He calls it hirhur, the thoughts, but nothing in my life has changed. I just know conceptually something has to change. So the Gemara says that at this moment, Nebuzradan now is up to his chin in blood, in Jewish blood. He's killed out the Sanhedrin. He's killed out the Jewish leaders. He's killed thousands of children. And now, Hirher b'tshuva. Now he realizes, because what just happened? What just happened? He realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has just intervened to save the remnant of the Jewish people. And even the bloodthirsty butcher realizes this. See, he has just seen the presence of God up close and personal. Hirher b'tshuva. Listen to this. Listen to this story. Amar, Uma im al nefesh achos kach, hahu gavra de kotal kol hani nishmasa, alachas kama vakama. So listen to what he says. If this was the price that was exacted from the Jewish people for having killed Zechariah, for having killed one man, then imagine the price that is going to be extracted from me for killing all of these people. See, he has this incredible awakening as Jewish blood is filling Everest. So what happens? Arak, he got up. Azal, shadar shtar partasa bevese v'igayir. What happens? He essentially got up, he ran away, he sent a letter home, giving away all of his, you know, it's actually interesting. Shtar partasa bevese could mean two things. According to English over here, it means that he went ahead and he gave away all of his property. Shtar partasa could also mean he divorced his wife. So essentially, he gave up everything in life, the egayer, and he converted. Nebuzradan, the Rasha, becomes Jewish. The Gemara says, Tana, Na'aman ger Tosha, we're not going to worry about Na'aman right now. Nebuzradan ger tzedek haya. Nebuzradan, the butcher, becomes a ger tzedek. Yes.
Yeah.
Tshuva. Zohi kocha shel tshuva. I mean, look, do I think that Nebuzaradan would probably be better off living alone, not being part? Probably. But at the end of the day, look what the Gemara says about him. Leaving aside how he actually fit into the community, right? I have to imagine, you know, having him at Shal Shulis might be a little bit awkward. But leaving that aside, the point the Gemara is making over here is, here's a man who has incredible hero. Now remember, you have to understand, why does he run away? He has to run away. Why? Because Nebuchadnezzar is going to kill him. Because Nebuchadnezzar is going to have the entire Babylonian army running after him. You can't just decide that you want to go off to Kolel, you know, after you've butchered the entire Jewish people and think that your boss is going to be okay with that. So he has to give up every trapping of normal life, and he becomes a Ger Tzedek. And again, it's a mind-blowing story. And I just want to point out, we speak about Nebuzaradan Tisha B'Av, which of course is quite unique. Why? Why? Because remember, the Torah says, Lo sonu es hager. You are not supposed to verbally afflict the ger, the convert. What does that mean? The Gemara says, you're not supposed to remind a convert of his past. In fact, Rabbi Friend just had a beautiful essay about this in the past week's parasha. Torah says that what? How does the Torah introduce us to Moshe Rabbeinu? It tells us that Moshe was Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe. How can you call him the Kohen Midyan, the high priest to idolatry? It's a shaila. Okay, so there are many different answers about it. For Yisro, it was a badge of honor. He was accomplished in every other area, but yet he still chose to give that up. An exceptional idea. But yet we see, and I think Chai, this speaks to your point, is you know what? There is some evil that you perpetrate in life that you cannot erase. And even if you try to square things away between you and God, those things don't go. So Nebuzaradan, you know, we're proud of you. We are proud of him, that he had this incredible tshuva. But what you did is not erased. You wiped out the Sanhedrin. You killed thousands of children. That doesn't go away because now you've decided to be chozer b'tshuva. So it is interesting that he still has this stain on his identity. So now, watch this. Yes. Yeah, I think because to a certain degree, I think that we're not sure what to do with it. Because I think, like Chaya said, you know, what do you do with this story? What do you do with Nebuzaradan? So now Nebuzaradan comes to me. Are you telling me now that I have mitzvah v'yahavtal re'acha kamocha to Nebuzaradan, who killed the Jew? So I just think that it's there. It's fascinating. So we'll talk about, because I think the difference over here is Nebuzaradan is Nebuchadnezzar, as bad as he was, destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. We don't have this same level of butchery and atrocity, even though they happened under his watch. We don't have it attached to him as an individual. Nebuzaradan, we have. I don't know. Yes. Oh, we're going to talk about that. Good. It's excellent. Why was he privileged to see that? Right? When he sees the blood of Zacharias, it's an excellent, excellent question, which is actually going to be part of our common denominator. Nebuzaradan obviously must have been someone that he was zochet to see such a miracle. Why was he zochet to see such a... Good, we're going to answer that. Yes. Oh, so good. We're going to talk about that as well. A hundred percent. We're going to talk about that as well. Yes. Yeah, 100%. It's a good question. Meaning, if I was sitting on the Beis Din and the Nebuzaradan came before us to convert, I'd say, you know what? Go be a righteous Gentile. I don't know. It's a good question. The evil sin, which again, I think to a certain degree, Chazal accept that reality as well, which is why we still speak about him as Nebuzradon the butcher on Tisha B'Av, despite the fact that he converted. Let me make one thing clear over here. All the Gemara is saying is that he changed. The Gemara is not saying, and therefore all is forgiven. The Gemara is not saying, therefore all is okay. Therefore, you know what, we'll give you a shlishi or shishi ori. We're not saying any of that. The Gemara is just telling us a statement of fact. He was maharher b'tshuva, he has this awakening, he converts. Does that mean that after 120, he doesn't have to stand before God and give accounting for everything that he did? I'm sure that's not what it means. I'm sure that's not what it means. So take a look. Take a look at number 9. Somebody, yes?
I'm sure this is in the Jada, but it sounds like he did Shiva from Hira. Like he says, if this...
He was scared. Yeah.
Look what's going to happen to me.
It's still going to happen to him.
It's still going to happen to him. And he didn't say, like, wow, I really believe in Hashem's brother, I want to be a Jew. It sounds like he really just said, I really don't.
It could be. Again, not that I'm a big defender of Nebuzradon, but just understand, that was incredible Mesiras Nefesh. Nebuzradon knew full well that he was going to have to give an accounting for everything that he did. And yet he still made the choice to leave it. Meaning most people, the way it worked, Rav Soloveitchik writes extensively about this, he calls it the sinner mentality. Most people have difficulty doing tshuva because we have too much invested in the identities we have created. So if I do tshuva, if I change, then what does that mean about how I lived my life until now? What does that say about me? So the way most people operate is, you know what, don't think about it. What I'm doing is just fine because the stakes are too high to go ahead and change. Nebuzradon is not under any illusion that now by embracing Judaism, he's going to get a get out of Gehenna free card. He doesn't think that. But nevertheless, he's confronted by the immorality of his deeds and he feels compelled to act. What punishments he gets, how the community, I don't know, and I'm not even sure that's relevant for our conversation right now. The point that the Gemara is making is, here was someone confronted by the depravity of his deeds and felt the need to address it. Yes?
How can
you
compare
Yisro
to such a
person? I'm not comparing you. No. Chas Hashem. No. Gavri, I'm not. I was saying actually just a little bit the opposite. I was just pointing out that under normal, I was just bringing up a kasha by Yisro that we happen to remind him of his past. But no, I'm not equating them at all. I'm not equating Nebuzradon to anyone. And I'm going to be clear. Please understand. I'm like not president of the Nebuzradon fan club. You know, this is not the. You know, again, the guy obviously was a Rosh. But I just. It's a tough crowd. Just you have to understand, you have to be overwhelmed by the enormity of his actions. Was it motivated because he found the Kadosh Baruch Hu at a beautiful sunrise? Of course not. He's standing knee-high in blood, and he recognizes that he is in big trouble with God. You don't have to say a lot of good things, but you do have to give him the credit for at that pivotal moment making a magnanimous change that 9 out of 10 people in that same situation would have never done, would have just simply continued to plow forward in their current identity because the stakes of change are too high. Look at number nine. We're going on. Number 9. says, I want to get to the common denominator at least.
But he merited to see a miracle, so somehow, somewhere, there's something...
About him, which goes back to, is there something special about Nebuzradon from the beginning? All right. So look at number 9. So I want to show you something else that's very interesting here. So look at this theme. The Gemara says, same Gemara. Mipnei banav shel Haman, lamdu Torah b'bnei Brak. Haman's grandchildren were learning in Kolel in b'nei Brak. Mipnei banav shel Sisra, the grandchildren of Sisra, lamdu tinokos b'Yerushalayim, taught in Cheder. In Yerushalayim, right? Sisra is the famous story, right? With Devorah, the prophetess, with Barak, he's also a very barbaric general. His grandchildren again are teaching Torah in Yerushalayim. Mibnei banav shal Sancheiriv. Remember, see now Sancheiriv. Sancheiriv was one of the opinions. Who was the novel? Mibnei banav shal Sancheiriv lamdu Torah berabim. Became such great Torah personalities that what? They taught the masses in public. And who were these grandchildren of Sancheiriv? Man Inun, Shmaya, Va'avtalion. Shmaya v'Avtalion. Now remember, what's special about Shmaya and Avtalion? Right? So remember, Shmaya and Avtalion are mentioned in the first parak of Pirkei Avos. Right? Remember that the first parak of Pirkei Avos mentions the two-headed leadership model of a Nasi and an Av Beis Din. The one mentioned first is the Nasi, the second one mentioned is the Av Beis Din. So Shmaya and Avtalion. Shmaya and Avtalion are the two heads of the Jewish people. The Nasi is like the person who is essentially the quasi-monarch. The Av Beis Din is the religious head. Right? So what's important? Whoever is mentioned in the first parak of Pirkei Avos is part of the explicit Mesorah, this explicit tradition. Because remember, how does Pirkei Avos begin? Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah, gave it to Yoshua. Yoshua to the elders to the prophets to the men of the great assembly. And then everyone mentioned in the first parak is part of that transmission. So you understand what the Gemara is saying over here, that the grandchildren of Sancheirev, not only were great Rabbanim, not only were great teachers of Torah, were part of the actual Mesorah. Were part of the actual transmission of Torah. See, something amazing happening over here. So we have now, remember, we have now Nebuzradan. Now we don't know anything about Nebuzradan's children, but you know about Nebuzradan himself, who runs away and actively embraces HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever that means. We now have the children of Sancheirev, who are going ahead and learning Torah, Shema and Avtalion. So isn't it intriguing? And Nebuchadnezzar, I didn't quote his story over here, but Nebuchadnezzar ultimately finds his own path back to... Well, we'll leave Nebuchadnezzar for a different time for now. But I'm just pointing out over here that you have the Malbim who's quoting that the novel is Sancheirev. You have Rashi quoting it that it's Nebuchadnezzar. You have the Metzudat Sefer quoting that it's Nebuzradan. So for two out of the three, you have explicit halachic literature that tells us that these people came back to God. So or their descendants came back to God. Either they or their descendants. See a very strong common denominator that among the quote-unquote Nevalim, right? Among the Nevalim that are mentioned over here, interestingly enough, they find their way into our tradition at some point in time. So what's the pshat? So skip down a little bit towards 12, just because of time. I have to come back to this Zeriak of a different time, and I want to get to this Maharal. So the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says, Nevuzar and Ger Tzedek. So look what the Maharal asks. This is the Maharal's commentary in the Gemara. He says, Da, kimasha siprukan, min harishoim shezaram nizgayer biyisrael. And remember, I'm not focusing on Haman right now because he's not one of the interpretations for the novel, but the fact that Haman's grandchildren are learning Torah in Bnei Brak, you know, that's, you know, when the Megillah closes, we're all clapping that Haman is hanged. But amazingly enough, his children become part of our people. So the Maharal says, "Da kimasha siprukan min harishoim shezaram nisgayer b'Yisrael v'lamdu Torah b'Rabim." Who in your nifla? So the Maharal says, to tell you the truth, I don't understand this. I don't understand how these people who are so depravedly evil, their children become not only parts of our people, but become dominant forces within Klal Yisrael. He says, and the Maharal says, I'm going to explain it to you. Ki ishtach aladas, says the Maharal, you have to understand the following. Ki ishtach aladas, shaharishoim, כאשר הם מופלגים ברישוס ויש להם כוח עליון. So the Maharal says that who are these people? Who are these Rishoim? So his words are very important over here. These are Rishoim muflogim berishos. Muflogim berishos means what?
Outstanding.
Mitsuyonim. They are outstanding in their evil depravity. There is no one who is as good as perpetrating evil as these. You know, you could be a little evil, you know, or you could like be like an all-star evil. Like these guys are muflogim. They are mitsuyonim. They are the pinnacle. They are the paradigm of evil as the embodiment of human evil. So he says, v'yesh lahem koach elyon. Koach elyon means what? Strength. You know what Maharal is saying? They have passion. They have passion. They have incredible commitment and passion towards their particularly depraved cause. Ki ein safek shahayu le'ilish zachar koach elyon. Uba'osa koach hayopoel rakma shahayupolim hayubatuma v'cho koach elyon who wrote that bikedusha kimosha roi le'elyonim. So the Maharal says something amazing. You know, successful people have a common denominator. All have a common denominator. What's a common denominator? Commitment, passion, drive. That they all have. That's the mark of successful people. In life, it's just a question of how you choose to channel it. How you choose to channel it. So what's the common denominator between Nebuzradan, Sancheirev, Nebuchadnezzar? These are all driven, passionate, powerful people. They chose to put all of that koach into committing terrible atrocity and evil into the Jewish against the Jewish people. He says, "Ulekach ach im etzel ha'avos shahayu rishoyim di koach hazeh hayu betuma mikol makom haya hakoach hazeh betara etzel habanim." Ulekach haya lahem zera kodesh ulefichach hayu gidolim umelamdim tor berabim. So it says about something amazing. These same people who had this exceptional koach, it was only a matter of time until what? Until someone in the family chain would realize a way to positively harness and channel these kochos. And therefore, says Maral, yes, it's not a surprise that from the most depraved evil comes the most intense kedusha. Because again, you take a Haman, or you take a Nebuzradan, or you take a Sancheirev. Let's go with Sancheirev because that's the most dramatic one. So a Sancheirev who is committed to destroying the Jewish people, even an incredible person who was, is committed to seeing this project to fruition. He ultimately fails, but he has this incredible commitment, incredible passion. So somewhere, I don't know when, but somewhere along the family chain, that koach is still there. That's part of the spirit of the genetic makeup of the family of Sancheirev. Someone came along and harnessed that koach, but put it into the good. And when you harness that incredible passion, that incredible drive, that incredible commitment to some ideal, when someone down the road harnessed it towards Torah, we come about with a Shemaya and a Talion. Therefore, says the Maharal, that's why what the Gemara is trying to identify over here. All these terrible people, they weren't just terrible. What were they? They were Rishoyim Muflogim, right? They were Mitsuyonim. They were perfect. They were the paradigm of accomplishment in their hatred, in their brutality, in their animalistic behavior. And all it took was someone to harness that, turn it the other way, and therefore, yes, their descendants become the greatest of the great within our people. Just so you should know, we see this concept much earlier on. The Rav Soloveitchik discusses the idea that Avram Avinu. So where does an Avram Avinu come about? How does an Avram Avinu emerge from an idolatrous society? So the Rav says, it's not as difficult as you think. You know, the Chazon Ish wrote, he said, you know, if you ask people, who's greater? You know, us or the generations who worshipped idolatry? So we'd say, us, right? We're not bowing down to idols. Chazon Ish said, absolutely not. He said, at least when they worshipped idolatry, they had a desire to connect to something bigger than themselves. The Chazon Ish says today, people are more than happy just to think about themselves. They don't need anything bigger in life than themselves. What the Chazon Ish was also driving at was this yesod, that Avram Avinu lives, and the Rav writes this explicitly, Avram Avinu lives in a time where there is rampant idolatry. Rampant idolatry. So what happens when there's rampant... What does it mean if there's rampant idolatry? There's also rampant what? Spirituality. If there's rampant idolatry, there's rampant spirituality. People want to believe in something bigger. People want to look to a higher power. People want to connect with some type of God identity. So what was the greatness of Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu didn't reinvent the wheel. What did our invent the wheel? What did Avraham Avinu do? He channeled it. Avram Avinu said, I'm living in a generation that has such incredible intensity towards divine worship, that has such love for God. They're just they're just dispersing it in all different places. But ultimately, Avraham Avinu was the first person to harness and to channel that energy, and that's how Avraham Avinu becomes not just a monotheist, but the monotheist. Because when you harness all of that incredible energy and point it in one direction towards Kodesh Baruch Hu, the results are absolutely magnificent. So that's the Maharal is describing over here, that all of these individuals were the greatest of Rishayim, or exactly that, the greatest of Rishayim, but we know that that says something about their character. They're passionate, they're driven, they're committed. Those are the most important traits that we as a people try to acquire. So when somewhere along their family line, someone decided to channel it, harness it in the right way, the results were absolutely amazing. So I think what comes out over here is something amazing. That David HaMelech, again, in a very nuanced fashion, is teaching us another incredible lesson. Yes, there's a message in the kapitel that ultimately, that even those who wrong us will ultimately be held accountable. David HaMelech is saying that Mizmor L'Mamasech David Amar Naval Belibo Ein Elokim, that even the novels in life, even the novels in life, whether like was suggested before, you want to go with just the novel B'Rishus HaTorah, the people don't really mean it, right? But even the novels in life, even those who think they are beyond salvation, even those who look so removed from God that there should be no hope for them to ever repair any kind of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even those who literally go so far to say there is no God, even those novels are salvageable. Even those people are not beyond repair. So on one hand, David HaMelech speaks about the incredible brutality that is perpetrated by man, specifically against the Jewish people, as a result of not having a relationship with God. But in that same sweeping condemnation that David HaMelech makes of those people, he also what? He also gives them, and by definition gives us, the incredible ability for hope. Because if a Nevuzradon could turn things around, if a Sancheirev's family could turn things around, if a Nebuchadnezzar, if all of these people, if a Haman could turn things around, then ultimately, what does that say about us? So David HaMelech expects us to read Tawakkur the following message. You know, so often in life, we think we're beyond salvation. So often in life, we think that we're irreparable, right? I'm broken, and the most I could do is try to, like, you know, the tires are flat, so the most I could do is kind of plug up the hole. But we don't realize that there's no such thing as a person beyond salvation. The only people who are beyond salvation are the people who choose not to salvage themselves. Those are the only people beyond salvation. Because from the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as long as I'm willing to go ahead and harness that energy, as long as I'm willing to harness all of those midos, all those attributes, the character traits that maybe perhaps I'm not using appropriately now, if I could harness them and channel them in the right way, there's no telling what I could make from my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if it applies to these Gentile individuals, right? If it applies to these Rishoyim from the nations of the world, then imagine what it means for us who already have that beginnings of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even if there are things that need repair, even if there are things that need a little bit more channeling, David HaMelech tells us that there's no one who's beyond salvation. All right, we'll stop over here.
Up the road. Isn't it always,